Picture a late summer afternoon in 1940. The sky over southern England is loud, not with thunder, with Merlin engines, dozens of them, climbing hard out of Biggin Hill and Tangmere and Kenley, clawing for altitude before the next wave of German bombers crosses the coast. Most people, if you ask them which airplane saved Britain that summer, will say the Spitfire, and they're not wrong to love it. The Spitfire is one of the most beautiful machines ever built, but here's something the history books don't always lead with. The airplane that did the heaviest lifting, the one that knocked down more Luftwaffe aircraft than any other type, wasn't the Spitfire at all. It was its older, thicker, less glamorous partner, the Hawker Hurricane. I'm Taildragger. You're listening to The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because this one deserves a full cup of coffee. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now let's go back to the beginning. The Hurricane was born in the mid-1930s, at a time when the Royal Air Force was still flying fabric-covered biplanes with open cockpits and fixed landing gear. The Hawker Aircraft Company, under chief designer Sidney Cam, had been building biplanes for years. Cam was good at it. The Hart, the Fury, the Demon, beautiful airplanes, fast for their era. But Cam was watching the world change, and he knew that Germany was rearming and that the biplane era was running out of time. In 1934, Cam began sketching what he called the Fury monoplane. It was a private venture. Hawker was building it without a firm contract from the Air Ministry. The design was a compromise, and historians have sometimes called it that, with a hint of criticism. But compromise is not always a weakness, sometimes it's wisdom. The Hurricane used modern stress skin aluminum construction for its front fuselage and wings. But the rear fuselage was fabric over a metal tube frame, old technique familiar to the men who would maintain it. Cam knew that a revolutionary airplane that nobody could fix in the field was not actually useful. He built something his ground crews could understand, patch, and get back in the air on a rainy Tuesday morning with hand tools and grit. The prototype flew for the first time on the 6th November 1935. The Air Ministry placed an order for 600 aircraft just over a year later. By the time the war started in September 1939, Fighter Command had over 500 Hurricanes on strength. That number matters, because when France fell and the Battle of Britain began in earnest in the summer of 1940, it was the Hurricane squadrons that were ready in numbers. The Spitfire was magnificent, but there weren't nearly as many of them yet. Now here's where it gets interesting. Fighter Command's Commander-in-Chief, Air Chief Marshal Hugh Dowding, made a very deliberate tactical decision about how to use the two types. He knew the Hurricane was slower than the Spitfire and a less capable opponent against the Messerschmitt 109, so he assigned the Hurricanes primarily to attack the bombers, the Heinkel 111s, and the Dornier 17s and the Junkers 88s. The Spitfires would engage the fighter escort, the 109s, and try to keep them occupied while the Hurricanes tore into the formations. It was not a glamorous assignment. Attacking a formation of Heinkel 111s meant flying into a wall of defensive gunfire from dozens of aircraft simultaneously. The Hurricane pilots knew what they were flying into every single time they got an intercept vector, but they went every day. Sometimes multiple times a day. The Hurricane was, in many ways, perfectly suited for this role. It was rock solid in a dive. The wide, stable undercarriage meant it could operate from rougher fields. Eight Browning .303 caliber machine guns in the wings gave it a lethal broadside, and that fabric rear fuselage actually had a quiet advantage that the pilots came to appreciate. When a German 20mm cannon round passed through aluminum, it punched a clean hole and could trigger structural failure. When it passed through fabric, it passed through fabric. The Hurricane sometimes came home with tears in its rear section that would have put an aluminum-skinned airplane on the ground permanently. The Rolls-Royce Merlin engine up front was another story. It had a carburetor rather than direct fuel injection, and in a negative G pushover, the float carburetor would cut out momentarily as the fuel lifted away from the jets. German pilots discovered this and used it tactically, pushing their 109s over into steep negative G dives because they knew the Merlin would cough and stall for a half second while the Daimler-Benz kept pulling. The British called it bunting when the Germans did it, and it cost several pilots their lives before the engineers caught up. The solution eventually was simple and elegant and came from a woman named Beatrice Tilly Schilling. She was an engineer at the Royal Aircraft Establishment, and incidentally a motorsport racer in her spare time. She designed a small brass restrictor disc, about the size of a small coin with a hole in the center, precisely sized to limit fuel flow just enough to prevent the cutout without strangling the engine at full power. It was officially called the Ray Restrictor. The pilots called it Miss Schilling's Orifice, which is exactly the kind of name that should make you laugh. and also remind you that the Second World War was full of people solving impossible problems with elegantly simple tools. But back to the hurricane itself. During the Battle of Britain, which officially ran from the 10th of July to the 31st of October 1940, Royal Air Force statistics credit the hurricane with destroying approximately 55% of all German aircraft lost to fighter command. Some sources put the number even higher when you include claims that couldn't be confirmed to a specific type. The Spitfire gets the magazine covers and the airshow crowds. The hurricane did the math. By the end of the battle, Britain was still in the fight. The Luftwaffe had failed to achieve air superiority over England. Hitler postponed and eventually abandoned Operation Sea Lion, the planned invasion of Great Britain, and while there were many reasons for that outcome, the hurricane was near the top of the list. The airplane served in virtually every theater of the war. Hurricanes flew over Malta when that tiny island was under some of the most intense aerial bombardment of the entire conflict. Hurricane pilots in North Africa discovered they could hang bomb racks under the wings and go after Rommel's tanks. The tank-busting version, fitted with a pair of Vickers 40mm cannons, was called the Hurricane Mark II Delta. You can imagine the sound of that. Two aircraft-mounted anti-tank guns firing in bursts. The ground shook. The pilots reported that the recoil slowed the aircraft noticeably each time they fired. That is a cannon. Hurricanes flew from aircraft carriers. The merchant aircraft carrier ships, or MAC ships, were converted grain tankers with a flight deck bolted on top. The hurricane pilot on a MAC ship had exactly one option when he launched into the North Atlantic. There was no recovery. You flew your mission, and then you either found land, found a friendly ship that could fish you out of the water, or you ditched. The catapult launched hurricanes on the CAM ships. The catapult aircraft merchantmen were essentially a one-way ticket. One pilot on one of those ships reportedly said before his launch that the mission plan was simple. Go up, shoot something down, and swim. He made it back. Some did not. Hurricanes flew in the Soviet Union under the Lend-Lease program. Soviet pilots initially found them underpowered compared to their Yaks. And the airplane had some honest limitations in the Eastern Theater, where the temperatures were brutal and the operational conditions were like nothing the British designers had imagined, but they served, over 2,000 were delivered. That number alone tells you how desperate the situation was and how much production capacity Britain was willing to share in the Far East. Hurricanes tangled with the Mitsubishi A6M0. Those encounters were grim. The Zero was lighter, faster climbing, and extraordinarily maneuverable. Hurricane pilots learned quickly not to try to outturn it. The one advantage they held was dive speed and structural strength. A hurricane could stay together in a dive that would have torn a Zero apart. Standard advice was to attack, convert to a dive immediately, and extend trade altitude for safety and come around again. It was not the heroic turning dogfight of the propaganda posters. It was survival flying, which is the only kind that counts. By the end of production in 1944, Hawker had built 14,533 Hurricanes. That is a number worth sitting with for a moment. 14,533. Assembled in factories in Kingston, upon Thames and Langley, and in plants across Canada by Canadian Car and Foundry. Assembled by women and men working double shifts under the knowledge that what they were building was the difference between invasion and survival. Sidney Cam, the designer, was knighted in 1953. He went on to design the Hawker Sea Fury, the Hawker Hunter, and the Harrier Jump Jet. That last one still makes people stop and stare at air shows. But in 1940, the airplane that mattered most in his catalog was the one the world half forgot. The thick-winged, fabric-tailed, 8-gun fighter that climbed out of the English summer to stand between everything and the worst that could come from across the channel. Today there are around 12 to 14 airworthy hurricanes remaining in the world, depending on which restoration is currently complete or in progress. The Battle of Britain Memorial Flight in the United Kingdom operates one. The Canadian Warplane Heritage Museum in Hamilton, Ontario operates another, a beautiful 2-seat conversion that still carries passengers aloft. Every single time one of those Merlins lights up and the exhaust note settles into that low, powerful rumble, somebody nearby gets a little quiet, as they should. The Spitfire gets the songs, the Hurricane gets the gratitude of history, and honestly, I think the Hurricane pilots would have been fine with that arrangement. They were that kind of people. Most of the history in today's segment draws on John Alcorn's work in the Battle of Britain Historical Society archives, Francis K. Mason's definitive volume on the hurricane, and the Imperial War Museum's operational records. Find more segments like this one at RadioHangar.com. I'm Taildrager, fly safe, and give a nod to the thick-winged ones once in a while. they earned it.